What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today's episode, we got to talk about the Kelly Olynyk trade. He was a Wizard officially for about 72 hours, and I'm sure that Will Dawkins saw the comment sections on some of the posts introducing him on Instagram, Twitter, and maybe that's why he realized he needed to trade him, but he's off to San Antonio. The Wizards got Cam Whitmore. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Talk about the Summer League roster and who better to break it all down with me than my guy, Matt Moderno. Thank you so much for joining us today, Matt.
Yeah, happy to be back, Greg. Always love doing this with you. And I like the Summer League group overall. So I think we're going to have a fun convo. And yeah, no Kelly Olynyk. So that's something worth celebrating at least.
Yeah, I mean, I want to get your thoughts. It's funny because a lot anytime you see on Twitter like a team loses pretty badly and they post about it, when the comments are like double, triple the likes of the post, you know, like something went wrong. And that was the Olynyk introduction. Like they tweeted out, you know, welcome Kelly Olynyk, and most of the replies were, no, let's not welcome him. Please send him out. And they did 3 days later. Now, I doubt that's the reason. Obviously, if you're unfamiliar with the deal, they sent Olynyk to San Antonio, and in return, they got Malachi Branham, who was the 20th pick in 2022. They got Blake Wesley, who was the 25th pick in 2022, and they got a 2026 second round pick via San Antonio. What is your immediate reaction trying to make sense of this trade from the Wizards?
Well, if you listen to Wizards Twitter, you know that Will Dawkins must actually follow along on Wizards Twitter because every draft pick last year were Wizards Twitter guys. So clearly Will is looking to the fan base for a direction on where to go. I mean, the move's great. Like it's Kelly Olynyk in a vacuum is actually a good, useful player and probably been like underrated for his career, but if you're not like a clear veteran that they could maybe flip for a lot of value down the road or increase your value by trading you later on, like there's probably not a long-term future for you in Washington. Like even the vets they like probably aren't going to be here a super long time. They only want to dedicate so many roster spots to veteran players, and they don't seem to care what positions, you know, that happens at. Somebody like Rashawn Holmes may ultimately get cut. So I do think they need some other big on this roster, which maybe means there's a follow-on consolidation trade. But just looking at this one, like in a vacuum, like, yeah, I mean, Olynyk is he's a good fit for San Antonio, and he didn't really matter to Washington. He doesn't change what they're going to try to do next year. So the guys they get back are worth taking a swing at. Does there a large chance that both of them turn into rotation pieces for the Wizards? Like probably not, but if one of them does, like that's a win of a trade. And you know, they may ultimately never be as good as Kelly Olynyk was. He just doesn't help them where they're at now. And I think one of the things it seems like this front office is trying to do is get a bunch of guys in the same development time window here and maybe have them grow and develop together. And maybe it's the rising tide lifts all ships kind of thing. And maybe they can be a little better, you know, when all these guys are contributors plus the cap space they have in that like 27, 28 time frame before their core young guys need these larger contracts. And if you can just supplement with cheaper rotation pieces that you've developed along with them as a part of their core, like, you know, let's say Blake Wesley just develops a little bit as a shooter and he's a good perimeter defender, transition weapon, those sorts of things. He can run basic offense for them. Like that's valuable if you can keep him on a 2-year, $8 million deal or whatever the case may be to be, you know, the third guard off the bench, fourth guard off the bench, whatever the case may be. So I think these are guys that could help them. And if they don't, it's really no harm, no foul. And one thing I think we've been critical of, maybe if you could say we've even been critical of Will Dawkins about, is maybe they hold on to their vets a little too long and try to extract like every little, you know, juice they could squeeze out of the fruit here with each vet. And that hasn't really worked out for them. So I have no problem with them just saying, you know what? Like we got an offer for Kelly Olynyk that we like, we're taking it. And that even if you get one second round pick out of it, that's still ultimately better than where they've gone with some of these guys, the Tyus Jones deal and all those sorts of things.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's a great point in terms of just maximizing on value. Like you got Olynyk. It wasn't the surrounding part of that Jordan Poole trade. You know, that wasn't the goal. It was to obviously offload certain salaries, and Olynyk expiring $13.4 million salary. Now the Wizards create another trade exception at around 13 million, so they can take on more bad contracts. Wesley Branham aren't getting paid as much as Olynyk, so you're obviously sending out a little bit more salary than you're bringing in. So again, you're creating a little bit more room below the luxury tax for the Wizards. And we'll talk more about Holmes later, but if you decide that you just want to cut your losses, here's your 250,000 guaranteed. We're going to save another 13 million. You're a good ways below that tax where you can take back more expiring salary and continue to stack picks. And another point you made is just trying to get as much talent in the room as possible. Like, I don't know if Branham has a role here. I will say, like, his first years in San Antonio, when he played decent minutes, he was averaging like 8, 9, 10 points per game. His minutes significantly dropped, and that's going to happen when they're way better. There's more talent in San Antonio, and the production wasn't there. But I like what he could be offensively. Wesley, 29% from three. I think that's definitely an area where he can improve. But I did like him coming out of Notre Dame. I also saw something on Twitter. Some guy in San Antonio that was neighbors with Blake Wesley was tweeting like he's just the nicest guy, and he'd like give them free tickets. So at least he's got that going, and the Wizards are getting another good person, good human being. But I like you said, like I don't think the trade is realistically about that. Another good thing, obviously, they pick up another second round pick to add to however many they have. But they also continue the trajectory of that 2026 salary cap. Like they're not taking back multiple years of Wesley and multiple years of Branham. They're both going to be free agents, restricted, but they're going to be free agents entering 2026. So you save a little bit of money and you send out a 34-year-old in Olynyk who wasn't going to be a part of the future. You get back a pair of 22-year-olds, and I don't know if they're going to stick, and also pick up a second round pick. Like I don't really see how anybody could be annoyed with this move. I don't think it's a home run. Like it's not going to change this franchise, but it's another move. And when you make enough of these moves and you continue to stockpile these assets, you can go and trade 2 seconds you got from the Valanciunas trade and from trading Julian Phillips 2 years ago, and then you go and get Cam Whitmore. And like that's the point of these smaller transactions, is to hopefully build up for a bigger one. Did you think that Olynyk could have gotten them more value? That's something that I saw a lot, is maybe you could have held out for more draft capital at the deadline. What is your take on that?
I mean, I trust these guys to get the value they could get for him. I mean, could you have waited a few months at the deadline and gotten a slightly better second round pick? Like, I just don't think it matters. I think the timing here is actually more important. You bring these guys into camp right now and see if there's anything you think you can get from Wesley and Branham in person, and you get a chance to evaluate them. And ultimately, they're probably about the level of whatever you would have gotten from some of these other second round picks. So I just don't think that that's worth quibbling over at this point. Like, you know, maybe somebody could have gotten so desperate for a center that gave you two, you know, top 50 protected second round picks instead of one. Like, it's not going to be a game changer either way. And freeing up his salary, getting the trade exception back in the process, I think is more valuable than, you know, holding out for that little extra stuff. I mean, what if he gets hurt and you get nothing for him? So I take what you can get for him now. You see where these guys are and if they can help you at all, and you go from there.
It's a great point because you talked about it earlier about their situations with Tyus Jones, Landry Shamet, Malcolm Brogdon even. Like I don't know what their offers are, but it's clear that they had their asking price, and when it wasn't met, they decided to just eat it and they got nothing for him. They walked for free. So if you can get this deal, then I think it's a solid deal. Like if they made this trade at the deadline, I would be equally as happy. So again, I agree with your sentiment there. I guess we'll kind of work around. I was going to talk about Whitmore for a second, but we're talking so much about the lack of depth at the center position. I don't think it's too big of an issue. Like I'm certainly not mad that they didn't reach on a center in the draft. You're not looking to make the play-in game this year. You're looking to just get the most talent as possible. What is your take on the roster? I'll break it down in a second, but obviously they traded Olynyk, and now in terms of forward slash centers, they have Alex Saar, who, call it what you will, some people think he could be a four, some people still think he can be a five. Tristan Vukcevic is a restricted free agent, so they tendered a two-way qualifying offer to him. That situation hasn't picked up much steam, but none of the restricted free agents have the last couple of days, really. And then you got Holmes, 250,000 guaranteed of his $13.2 million salary, which I think is a little too rich. What do you make of their front court depth or lack thereof, and what would you say you'd like them to do there?
I just don't think it matters ultimately. I think The Wizards are looking at the ultimate long game here, and you look at what teams are closing playoff games with, and it's some combination of four perimeter players, whether you call them wings or guards or whatever, and a big that's mobile enough to switch in front of people and also stretch the floor for these teams to play five out. And that's ultimately the best version of Alex Saar. So I think what this signals to me is that's probably what they're committing to is Alex Saar surrounded by switchable guys who can all shoot and provide some space. And they just don't care who is around him, you know, in the front court, because they're probably not going to play him a ton of minutes next to another big, you know, when they're a good team. So they're going to let him take his lumps early, you know, as the lone guy in the front court here. I do think somebody to like eat up a few minutes next to him against some of the bigger players in the league is just worth it, because you don't want him picking up any like dumb injuries when he's the only guy, you know, really in the rotation here. You know, Vucevic next to him, like they're probably not going to play a ton of minutes together, I wouldn't think, throughout the course of the year. So if you do waive Holmes, can you get somebody in there? Or I don't know what the situation is like that with Holmes. Could you renegotiate and keep him around on a cheaper 2-year deal or something like that, just to have a big body there if you don't need the roster spot by letting him go? So to me, it's like, all right, we're just really leaning into our long-term future. That's where he's the best. It's where he creates mismatches for people. And, you know, then you've just got to split those backup minutes per game between Vucevic and whoever that last player is. They've got a big guy, Liam Robbins. Jesus, I don't know why that's so hard to say, on their summer league team, kind of a drop coverage center who really shoots it, was a good college rim protector, but kind of even. He's kind of, I was gonna say immobile is maybe like too strong a thing, but he's not a great mover. But could they get him on a two-way to come in and eat up a few minutes here and there throughout the year? And maybe the thought is just, hey, like if somebody does get hurt later in the season, you know, we'll just bring somebody in on a 10-day and kind of fill, you know, plug in the holes as we need to. So Wizards fans that are like really tweaking about like we need an old school basket back to the basket center to play next to Saar, like that's just not what NBA teams are doing. And it's like, yeah, you can point to Cleveland, but how have they done in the playoffs the last couple of years? Like they dominate the regular season. So having a big next to Saar to get you through the regular season makes some sense. I think they're just saying we can go get that player cheaply on the free agent market because centers don't cost that much. So we'd rather invest in the positions that are harder to get.
Certainly, I mean, I'm in that camp as well. Like most of the replies to stuff is just they don't have any type of depth down low. They're gonna get bullied on the glass. Like they might, but I'll say this: the Saar and Valanciunas lineups last year were some of the hardest to watch, and they kept trying it, and it's pretty noticeable. But before he got traded, they stopped doing that. Like they were just like, this doesn't work because the spacing is just horrid on offense, and then on defense you're asking Saar to just guard people that are too quick, and then Valanciunas gets switched, and it doesn't work. You know, not everyone has Mobley and Jared Allen. Like Alex Saar and Valanciunas or whatever isn't gonna equivalent to that, because they're just not that good. They're not the same players. So you gotta have the right combination if you're going two bigs. And I think maybe Saar is a four. I don't know, but like you said, I think in an ideal world he gets stronger. And they can play them to close games as their five. So realistically, I'm not in the camp that you need to just get a center now. I wouldn't mind it. They have their non-taxpayer MLE. Like they have salary cap. They can spend money if they want in free agency. But they've made it pretty clear there was a decent market for centers. They decided not to really pursue it. And now they're kind of sitting there saying maybe there's some other leftover players and we can get them for cheap. Maybe they certainly I don't think want a longer term deal. Like they want to keep 2026 open for whatever they're trying to do. But now they do have a pretty crowded roster. I mean they have 17 standard contracts. You need 15 by opening night, and it could be 18 considering if they do give Tristan Vucevic a standard deal, that is 18. There's certainly easy fixes. They have a lot of wings. They have a lot of guards. And so there are some things like I said, waiving Holmes with 250,000 guaranteed, that doesn't necessarily help you down low. I mean, you would realistically have nothing behind Saar if that's the case, and you're gonna have to bring in some form of depth there at some point. But maybe they're just saying, you know what, we're just not paying you $13.2 million. Like that's not gonna happen. I don't know if you're worth that now. And maybe they look for somebody cheaper, or they, like you said, renegotiate it. and bring him back on a different deal. So that's another thing they can do is just waive him. Mike Scotto of HoopSype said that he had some sources indicating that's a realistic possibility that the Wizards can just waive Holmes, eat the 250K, and there's another roster spot down to 16. You could also waive one of the guys you just got via trade. Blake Wesley, Malachi Branham, Dylan Jones, they weren't drafted by Will Dawkins. They were also, I doubt, the centerpieces of these trades. Maybe they were an asset, but the second round picks, I think, were the star of the show, and they being able to dump some of the salary. So obviously, they are waive candidates. Only one has to be waived, I guess. Could let them compete in training camp and maybe in summer league and see what they got.
Yeah, there's no rush to do this. Like, you
Right?
can just kind of let it play itself out a little bit and see how it goes.
And then the last resort, and if they did this, I'd actually like. This would be the one Will Dawkins move I couldn't get behind. Justin Champagne, fully non-guaranteed deal.
That'd be a
He's still
mess.
got two, I believe, 2 years left on his deal, and then maybe an option in the third year. But he's getting paid like $2 to $2.5 million for the next 2, 3 years. He, I mean, like it or not, was arguably the most consistent player the last like 5, 10 games. A walking double-double, efficiently at that, from three, from 2-point range for this team. Like, I think that would be a very short-sighted decision. He's also only 24, so it's not like he's that much older than the current core. That is a move that I don't think they should do. It has to be talked about because he's fully non-guaranteed. But they could do that. I couldn't get behind it. What do you see them doing to maybe get to that 15 contract threshold?
Yeah, maybe some kind of consolidation where one of these guys gets flipped for, or two of these guys get flipped for another distressed asset on another team with some upside that doesn't also have long-term money. I like Champagne a lot. That's a dude to me. If I were another team, I'd be calling the Wizards out about a lot. He's much more productive than his contract. Like, if I were someone like Cleveland, I'd be like, yeah, hey, we really could use a three pretty badly here. And the 26th pick in next year's draft is not that valuable to us because, the player we get probably isn't as good as Champagne, and he doesn't help you a ton on your timeline. So maybe we can figure something out here. So that's the kind of stuff I expect them to at least try to explore. I'm not saying I would trade Champagne or I'd be in a hurry to do it. Does a team just need shooting so badly that they can deal with some of the deficiencies on the defensive side or the lack of, other things beyond just shooting that they try to get Corey Kispert? Like, there's some names. Do one of these teams have an injury in training camp and they need something, so they're willing to take on CJ McCollum's, dead money here to go get somebody, or Marcus Smart or whoever the case may be. So I just don't think they're like pressed about it right now. We've got plenty of time here to just let it sort itself out. Like, we as fans are like, no, immediately we need to know who the final roster is. And we're panicking about, like, well, what about these opens, or these overly filled roster spaces? And they're probably just like, hey, cool, like, let's let these guys beat each other up in camp and see who survives, and then we go from there.
Yeah, the trade front is definitely interesting because they continue to make moves. I mean, Ian Begley reported, I believe 2 days ago, that the Knicks checked in, I think is the term he used, on Marcus Smart. There's been reports that the Kings have been linked, the Warriors have been linked to Marcus Smart.
What the Kings need is more non-shooting guards or wings, right? Like, just let's play like 1994 basketball again.
I mean, I don't really know what they're doing. I mean, certainly an
Neither do
overpay for
they, so you're in
Schroeder.
good company.
I mean, maybe a team gets desperate enough to take back. I mean, 21.5 million for Smart maybe 2, 3 years ago. Like, sure, with all the injuries he's had, like I don't know why a team would want to do that. But maybe they have contracts. It's tough though, because like the Wizards, I don't think are in the camp of, oh, you have this year plus another year of a contract you don't want to pay. We'll give you this expiring deal. I think the Wizards want expiring deals. So I don't know if a team has expiring for expiring, and if that's the case, that they want Smart. So maybe that's difficult. The Corey Kispert, like I. It's funny because I haven't seen any type of rumors. Like, I've seen literally nobody with a credible source say the Wizards are shopping Kispert, that he's been in trade talks. But the Wizards' Twitter fan base seems to think that it's all they've seen from Shams and all of them. And it makes sense, I guess, because he's not drafted by this regime, longest tenured Wizard. Again, this is a front office that seemingly likes lanky wings that can shoot the ball but also defend and defend multiple positions. And he can't do that, obviously. So I think he's a way better player than some maybe give him credit for. Certainly a really gifted cutter and a good shooter when he's on. Didn't have a good season last year, about 35%. But
Can I just tease out the cutting thing for a second? I know that's like something that Chris Miller loves to harp on, but like, what real value has that brought to the Wizards the entire time he's been here? Like, they don't really have any real playmaking guards. How many times have you ever seen someone like actually hit him on a cut that led to
It's
an easy
true.
basket? They're not running him back door all that often. Like, it's cool to say he can do it, but like this, oh my God, we can't give up his streaky 38% from three or whatever he is, and the cutting. It just, I'm not saying you're doing that, but like, I'm like, cool. It's a nice thing he could do, but cool.
Well, two things to that. I mean, number one, like for like when your team is like winning 15 to 18 games a year, I'm sure you're like actively looking for that stuff. So I
Absolutely.
doubt that you're wrong there in terms of like they got to gas it up as much as they can. There's not much. They're blown out most of these second halves. Like Chris and Drew are just like trying to like figure stuff out. But at the same time, like maybe that is actually valuable on a contending team. Like instead of an 18-year-old Bub Carrington or Jordan Poole passing him the ball if he's open, you know, maybe he goes to a contending team that has a really good point guard that can get him the ball. So maybe if I'm a contender, I'm looking at, okay, maybe these skills don't look that great here, but he's also being asked to do a lot more than we would ask him to do from Washington versus our team. So there's certainly value there. I think the contract is probably the most valuable, like 4 years at around 13 a year. I think it's a good asset to have. It's a pretty tradable contract, certainly more tradable than Smart. So I think maybe that's where the trade rumors come in. Like, what do you think the Wizards could get? Whether it's Smart, whether it's Kispert, like, do you think? I me personally, I think a first rounder would be like, that's crazy. They were able to pick that up. I think seconds are probably more likely. Like, where do you see their value being in the market?
I heard all year that the Wizards needed to hold out for two first round picks for Jordan Poole, and then they had to salary dump him. So I would imagine that whatever we're speculating they could get back for him, it's probably less than that. So a couple seconds is probably where we're at. Maybe again, a distressed asset, younger player, and a second, that sort of thing. I don't know. Maybe he's like either of those guys are just such a perfect fit. You could coax a team into giving you. Like at the 28th pick in the draft for Marcus Smart, if they got real desperate, something like that, I would highly kind of doubt it personally, but that's probably like the absolute best case scenario, I would think.
Certainly. I mean, look, like, again, you really don't know the value of certain players. And obviously, it depends. You know, the Wizards are clearly going for this route of 2026. We're going to contend, or at least try to compete, and we want to have the roster space available. And this is something I kind of dove into when all the Kuminga rumors, which I'm sure are probably dead now. And I will say, like, the Athletic.
You never know. We need more wings, Greg. I don't know
Yeah,
if you know this, but
always.
we don't have enough.
The Athletic, Anthony Slater reported that the Warriors had some sort of interest with the Wizards, and it seemed like the conversations were real. And then someone sent me a clip for, I guess it was Josh Robbins responding to a question on the Athletic website, and he was basically saying he called a Wizards source, and they said that there were no traction there. And then the Athletic updated their story to say that the Wizards pretty much denied it. And I'm sure if, even if they were in talks, they wouldn't say they were in talks, but just to kind of temper the Kuminga rumors. But an interesting topic there was like, you know, would if they gave him 30 million, I think it'd probably be an overpay. But realistically, like that might have to be the way they consolidate the money. Because I don't know if you have, you know, all of these players, they're gonna have what, 110, $115 million in 2026. Do you really think that the Wizards are gonna be able to attract some big name free agents? Because the class is certainly, you know, very impressive. But I feel like they might have some sort of difficulty selling this young core to one of the premier players. How do you view that?
So I don't know that it's necessarily like accumulating all that money just to go out and get a star or two. I think unfortunately for the Wizards where they're at, they're probably going to have to overpay just to get decent guys in the door and to participate in a rebuild. So you're still probably hoping, at least one of your young guys, whether it's next year's pick or whoever, based on internal development, turns into a star. Can you get a secondary player to go next to him? And then can you just fill in the gaps with like really good high level role players or some fringe starters? Like if you look at the Pacers model, right? Like you got to find a way to go out and acquire your Tyrese Halliburton still. Like we don't have our superstar, but maybe they've already drafted their Nemhards and a few of these guys. So Can you turn a few of these pieces and some cap space and things like that into Pascal Siakam and fill in the blanks with a Jalen Smith here, or maybe you hold out for some money to keep your next guy around as he starts to develop. I think that's the other thing. Like, yeah, they'll have cap space, next year, but we're not that far away from Bilal Coulibaly needing a contract extension and things like that too. So I don't think that there's going to be some mass spending spree to just get anybody in the door. It'll probably be a little bit of all of those things. You go get one guy, you keep some pieces, maybe you do the opposite of what teams are trying to do to you, and you're turning some of your cap space, into some helping somebody clear the books for a player that's more valuable to you as they start their rebuild, that sort of thing.
I'm glad you mentioned the Bilal extension because that's certainly an element as well. Like you got a lot of younger guys clumped up together, and not all you're not going to extend all of them, but certainly Bilal. And now you got Cam Whitmore, who's going to be extension eligible in the same period of time. So you got to consider, if he pops and has a great year, Bilal has a pretty good year. That's also going to take up a decent bit of your books. I remember for Chicago, Patrick Williams got that what 4-year $90 million contract, and at the time, it wasn't that much like it wasn't hated on as much, I guess, as it is now. But the Bulls
It
just
should
like
have been.
they didn't see enough. Like they were just like we just can't be wrong here. Like they gambled, took him pretty high in the draft already, and he had shown some stuff, but they were just like we can't pass on it. And then if he pops off and has a great year, so maybe that's what the Wizards are like with Bilal. Like maybe he doesn't show that much this year, but they're like, we have the cap space, we want to continue his development, and then they have the ability to extend him. Same goes for Whitmore. And then you got the next class coming up. You're gonna have Sarr, Carrington, George. In an ideal world, you would like to extend or give them second contracts because that would mean that they worked out. So I'm glad that you mentioned that. Like they might not be able to attract those free agents, but ideally they develop their own guys so that they have some of those guys in-house. Like the Thunder just gave Chet $50 million a year. They
They
drafted
did
him.
too.
They're gonna give J-Dub the same contract. Shea's making like 60, 70 a year. But that's because, they knew they maybe wouldn't be able to attract those guys to make that much money. But you gotta draft them, you gotta develop them. So maybe the Wizards are looking at this is how we're gonna spend that cap space, is with these rookie extensions, these max extensions for our 2-3 guys that pop from the 9-10 that they've sort of accumulated. And maybe some people pop in Summer League, and that's a nice transition into talking about the Summer League roster. Certainly very top heavy when it comes to first round picks. They're gonna have 7 from the last 2 years on this roster. So certainly a lot of intrigue at the top. And I want to touch on some of the other lesser known guys because I know you report on a lot of those Exhibit 10s. Of the 7 first round picks that you'll see from the last 2 drafts that'll play for the Wizards in Summer League, who are you most excited to watch?
That's a tough one, Greg. You're always trying to stump me. It'd be nice to see Keyshawn get to do a little bit more on ball. I think that'd be cool just to see some stuff there and how that sort of goes. Like, I don't know. I feel like we know what most of those guys are. I was going back and forth with a few Wizards fans today about just AJ Johnson and his role, because on my last pod, I made a comment that he probably competes with a Blake Wesley or one of or Malachi Branham or one of these guys for some backup 2 guard minutes. And I got the, well, no, why? AJ Johnson's a point guard. And okay, like I'd love to see him do something point guard-ish, if we're gonna say that, other than being like maybe point guard sized. He doesn't really create for others. He's not a dynamic ball handler. He gets downhill and maybe he can drive and kick a little bit. So it'd be cool to see if he can do some more on-ball stuff that maybe I've just missed. Those would be maybe the two I'd be most interested in of this group, of like the core group.
Yeah, I mean, AJ Johnson certainly flashed last year with some big time dunks and stuff, but there were also the games where he couldn't make a shot and he turned the ball over quite a bit. So again, I'm not there yet with the okay, AJ Johnson is the next great guard on this team. Like he certainly has a way to go. And I will say, like I don't know how much I should read into like practice jersey colors, but he was wearing blue the entire week, and the guys that were all wearing gray, maybe they're the starters. He didn't necessarily seem to be running with those guys. So
But those things switch so much throughout the course of a practice, and they're just trying different combinations and things like that. So I would caution not reading much of anything.
I mean, when they don't post too much about the team, then you kind of gotta read into it as much as you can.
I hear you.
But nonetheless, I mean, if you're asking me, like, I've heard so much this summer about like Bub Carrington putting on weight. That was kind of like what I saw a lot yesterday with some of the quotes and
From Bub himself. Yeah.
how much Bub is in the gym. So I'm curious to see how much of a leap he does take. I know you haven't been as high as maybe some Wizards fans on Bub. Like, what would you like to see? I would assume he's going to be playing point guard with that starting group. Like, what would you like to see from Bub?
Yeah, I mean, I really like Bub. I just think that like he's the guaranteed starting point guard in an NBA championship thing is like a little but we haven't seen enough to be really that confident yet. To me, he's at least like a good third guard, and I think that's pretty valuable. Like if he's your Andrew Nembhard or something on a, not that they're the same type of player, but you know, same caliber of guy on a playoff team, like that's awesome. You know, last year I thought he was much better on ball. If some of these other guys are going to get on ball reps, it'd be interesting to just see how he looks off ball. And yeah, if he can use that size to get a little more into the paint, like that's the biggest thing is getting to the rim, finishing at the rim. Those are important things to break down a defense, you know, in the NBA. Like Summer League is a little more of a crapshoot here and a free for all. And I think somebody like Bub that's got the skills that he does will thrive in that environment. I think we saw that last year. He wasn't crazy efficient, but he was ready to just go out and contribute and be productive. So I think we'll see more of that. I bet you he only plays like two games. That's sort of my assumption with most of the guys that are going to play like heavy minutes on this NBA team is we don't see a ton of Sar. We don't see a ton of Keyshawn. We don't see a ton of Bub. And you know, you're saving more of the minutes for some of these other dudes to see how they actually look in, you know, in this kind of setting.
Yeah, I've heard the same. Like, again, two games seems to be like the consensus on, and Sar also is still on that Eurobasket roster for France. That starts July 24th at training camp. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe he's one game, two games max, obviously, like some of the other guys. But it's also great because it allows some of the guys that are looking to make the roster, looking to solidify a two-way deal or solidify a spot on the go-go. And obviously, I know you know a lot of these guys. They're college guys, and they're also guys that there's a recent Believe in Wizards podcast actually that broke down some of the guys. I did a write-up on it, but so did Matt as well on Bolts Forever. So if you want to read about the rest of the roster, check out Bolts Forever. But there are some other guys on the team that I think are pretty intriguing. Let's start with Zeke Mayo, 22-year-old, played at Kansas this past season. I mean, 42% from three. Like, again, I don't know why. I just watch a lot of Kansas basketball, but I always liked what I saw from Mayo. I certainly can understand the reasoning for his draft position and all that stuff. What intrigues you most about what Mayo could bring to this team?
You know, there's like an archetype for that kind of guy to be successful is like not really a point guard, but I'm a capable enough ball handler to bring the ball across half court and get us into a set and just can snipe it. And I think in a league that needs shooting, you know, someone like that can get a chance. Could he be somebody's Bryn Forbes or, you know, one of those kind of guys that isn't really a world beater, but, you know, can just find a few minutes for him here and there? I think that's reasonable. The Wizards have had a lot of G League guards that are kind of undersized the last handful of years, even some regular guards on the Wizards roster that have been undersized. So he's got decent size. To me, he's really more of like a two guard kind of guy than like a real playmaker, but he's not super big to do that. So I think that's an uphill battle for him. It's a guy that didn't have a ton of experience at the Power Five level. He came over from South Dakota State where he was Summit League Player of the Year. So he's a talented dude. He fit in around decent pieces in Kansas. So, you know, there's a chance that to me, he'd be like a really good player on the go-go, even if you had to give him a two-way to do it. You're going to need shooting on that roster to see how some of these other young guys, Jameer Watkins, Will Riley, can develop in minutes over there. So, or even AJ Johnson if he plays some with the go-go. So, you know, I think it's a reasonable guy to try to lock in.
Talk to me about Okoli Gak. Like, this is a guy that I didn't know about until the roster came out, and I was doing some research. Undrafted a couple years ago, and played in the G League. 6'11", at least that's what he's listed at forward. Played for the Cairns Taipans in the NBL. the Mexico City Capitanes in the G League. Like, it seems like a real like upside guy, and that's maybe what he's been a lot of his career. Like, what do you make of him as a player?
Yeah, so Akolda, everybody calls him AK just because I think that's easier to say for them too. So if you hear them on the broadcast talking about AK, that's who they mean. He actually played against the Wizards a handful of years ago and had like in an exhibition game, Carnes came over and played the Wizards, and he had like 17-9 going against Daniel Gafford, and that's really just more on like energy and effort than anything else. He's still raw. He's like, I think he's 22 at this point. He's probably more 6'9" and change, I would say, but a good athlete. He'll run the floor really hard. He's a dude that would be a great flyer on the go-go, and you just see if he turns into a little bit more than that through effort and athleticism. Maybe he can carve his way on an NBA roster, but he's a ways away from being a ways away, I think, from being a productive NBA player. So if Alexar doesn't play a ton of minutes, you could see him getting out there, and you could play him next to another guy. Maybe we'll talk about like Jonathan Pierre and have a decent sized front court. So I'm not mad at them taking a flyer on a guy like that. And I think he played against the Wizards the year before Dawkins and company got there. So maybe they didn't see him directly, but at least there's a few minutes of him against NBA competition to really evaluate them against. And he played in a prep school here in America too. So like, he's not unfamiliar. I think he went to like, yeah, Blair Academy. So it, like, he's got tape against other NBA level guys. So I'm not mad at them taking a flyer on a guy like this.
Certainly. I mean, it was interesting because like I expected Mayo, I expected Gilbert. You talked about Pierre with some of the Exhibit 10s, but this was certainly, an ad that I wasn't expecting. But based on what you're saying, it seems like he can hold his own, and maybe it's a go-go guy going forward. I don't know if he'll get a two-way, but again, it depends how he plays. You mentioned Jonathan Pierre. You reported, Exhibit 10 contract. Belmont actually also put it on their thing. They had a whole write-up, which was helpful for me getting to know a guy like Pierre. 6'9" forward out of Belmont. Again, undrafted, but averaged, nearly 14 points, 6 boards, 37% from three. So, based on that, I assume he's like a willing 3-point shooter. What's kind of the breakdown of Pierre in his game?
Yeah, not like a great athlete. I think there's like a decent track record. So Belmont plays in the Missouri Valley Conference. Like, there's a decent track record of those guys translating up to the Power Five level. Like Maryland's point guard this year, Jacoby Gillespie came from Belmont and played with Pierre and things like that. So like, guys like that are successful in college basketball when they transition over. I think that was really the challenge with him, is he didn't have a big track record of production against the better competition that they played. So that's ultimately why I don't think he was really on like real draft radars. But hey, you take a 6'9" guy that's a decent mover and has some skills and can put the ball on the floor a little bit and shoot a little bit, I think that's totally worth a flyer.
Now I want to talk about Keyshawn Gilbert, another Exhibit 10 guy. Just because I so enjoyed watching that Iowa State backcourt. Like that was it was just really fun the way that they played offense. Like again, nearly 50% from the field at Iowa State. 13 points, 4 assists per game. I really liked what he showed on the defensive end as well. Like he seemed to be always picking up steals, getting his hands in lanes, like a pesky type defender. And sometimes like if you're at the end of a summer league roster and you're looking for a two-way spot, those are some of the guys that kind of stick out on that end. Average 2 steals a game as a junior, 1.7 as a senior, 6'4" guard. What intrigues you about a guy like Gilbert?
Yeah, I mean, this is maybe like an old school mentality here, but I'd love to see more MFers on the roster, and Gilbert is an MFer. Like, he will get up and dog people on defense. He was basically like the college roster equivalent of like what Marcus Smart does in the NBA. Like, this 6'4" guy that he's actually probably a better shooter, but like, he could score a little bit, but he'll just get up in you and be tough and physical. And I'm trying to remember who they played this year, but I remember one particular sequence where somebody ripped through in front of him and just caught him right in the face with an elbow. And he just started clapping back at them while the play is going on. I'm like, okay, he's a little crazy, and I like a little crazy. So your point there, Greg, like, this is probably one of the guys I would consider, a front runner for one of those two ways that I think they have two probably available at the moment, given whatever happens with Vucevic. So I'd be curious to see if he can kind of pull away with one of those spots, and I think a strong, summer league is a good way to do that too. So it'd be cool.
You mentioned the two ways, and these are sort of fluid. Like I know I've talked about how like right now they have Jalen Martin, Jameer Watkins, and Kadarius Richmond in those two ways, but a lot of times the two ways that are there now in July are not the two ways they start the year with. It's kind of like here we'll put you on it now, and then maybe some guy emerges and they say, you know what, here we go. I think you talked about this earlier. Like, if they sign someone to a two-way, does that like guarantee them more money if they stick around to the go-go? Like, is there certain rule? There's some sort of rule like that, correct?
It's over the Exhibit 10 is really the sweetener to get them to come over. So if you sign an Exhibit 10, there's obviously an opportunity to convert you to a standard contract, and that sort of gives them some confines of what that contract probably looks like. But also it gives you a signing bonus. You eventually convert to a G League contract. I think it's $75,000 that may have gone up a little bit this year. It's crazy to me that like Karl-Anthony Towns will make $68 million next year, and like we're quibbling over 68 grand for some of these G League bonuses. But like maybe we could get our guys up to six figures if they stay with the go-go for the year. But yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah, I mean that's helpful considering, how fluid the situation is with two-way contracts. You mentioned Vucevic, like they tendered a two-way qualifying offer, but with the lack of depth maybe they have down low, they give him a standard deal. Like, I don't know how they'd make the roster spots work, but that's always a possibility. One of the guys also that they reportedly signed to it was Kadarius Richmond, who, again, like if you're a college basketball fan and you've watched the last couple of years, like him at Seton Hall and then him at St. John's, like obviously a very talented, gifted player. He has his deficiencies, certainly the shooting being one of the most glaring holes there, but he was able to create for a really good St. John's team, was able to play a little bit on ball and kind of show some of the skills that he has there. What do you like about him as a player? Do you think he's a two-way candidate that can stick? Like, what do you expect in summer league?
Yeah, he's a jump shot away from being an NBA rotation player. And that's really the question of can they totally overhaul the jump shot, which is probably what it needs at this point. Like, I don't actually think he has particularly good touch either, which if a guy's got wonky form, but he's got good touch and he makes enough of them, you can kind of work with that. He doesn't really seem to do that either. So you're starting probably from scratch with him as a jump shooter. So that's really the challenge. Everything else, he's got the build, he fits the archetype. The nice thing here is, like we mentioned with Gilbert already, he's another MF-er defensively, and that St. John's team, like they were gonna crush like all over the court at every position and just be physical, and he does that. And I think that's really interesting to see. Who the Wizards are trying to fill out this roster with. It's like you've got Gilbert, you've got Richmond, you got Jameer Watkins, like you've obviously got Marcus Smart on the roster. Like they've got some tough MFers, and I think that's maybe the complaint about some of these guys that they've drafted is they are a little soft. So maybe it's exposure therapy of just if we just beat Koulibaly and some of these dudes up enough in practice, like that'll transfer, and that's what you want to see from them is consistency. So if they can consistently go against tougher, more aggressive defenders, like maybe that helps them kind of lock in, more consistently.
Certainly, and again, like I did like what I saw from Richmond. Again, not him getting going undrafted, like not the biggest surprise to me, but how quickly the Wizards scooped him up on a two-way deal, that made sense. He's a guy that has the tools, like you mentioned. It's the shot that I think maybe was the reason for his being undrafted in 2025. But if they can, fine-tune that and kind of figure it out, then certainly, I want to loop back before we talk about the last two guys, because we talked about summer league, and you're kind of what you're expecting from some of your second year players. But I will say, like, we had Johnny Davis on the roster last year as a third year guy, and like you kept saying, even in year two and year three, like you're not good against the NBA guys, but like you should dominate, you should really play well against these rookies and against fellow second year guys, especially now, him being a third year guy. Like, are you expecting some guys like Sar, who had a really bad summer league last year? Bob, are you expecting like pure domination, or are you more so like, hey, like let's rein in our thoughts? Like, they should play well and they should look like the best players out there, but by no means are they going to be dropping, 30, 35 points.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I'd like to see the guys do a better job of the roles they're going to ultimately do in the NBA and maybe look a little crisper at some of those things. Like, I don't expect Alex Saar to look crazy good in Summer League again because I just don't think the structure of it sets up for guys like him to look, their best selves necessarily. So it's AJ Johnson. Can you run any kind of offense? Have you made any strides as a shooter? Have you filled out? Bub, can you maybe use a little more of your physicality, play off 2 feet, bully your way to the rim a little bit more? Trey Johnson, we just want to see you do what got you drafted. Like Keyshawn George, can you grab and go? Can you be a secondary playmaker? Can you start the break? Those kinds of things. Will Riley, is the shooting better than some of the numbers indicated? Jameer Watkins, like, can you be more efficient? Like, those are the kinds of things that I think you want to see from some of these draft picks.
Certainly, and it's definitely interesting to kind of talk about Sarr and the fact. I mean, what was it? 0-15 that one game. One of the like
You
one
won't be
of
that bad
yeah,
again, Island, knock on wood,
one
but.
of the worst. But I'm glad you mentioned. Like sometimes it's just not your thing. It seems like this year, Kasperis Jakachonis is the new Alex Sarr. I think he's like 1-15 with like double digit turnovers through 3 games. But again, it's
It
possible that
happens.
he's just being asked to do way too much. Maybe he's not being played in the wrong in the right role. Maybe Summer League isn't the best environment for him. Like certain guys just don't thrive in these types of games. So again, even if like Sarr isn't dominating like some of you think, I think it's okay. But moving forward, I just want to get that thought across and kind of get your thoughts there. The last two guys, and it's funny that these are like older guys on the Summer League roster. Liam Robbins, 25, Leaky Black, 26. Like that's not old by any means, but I guess in Summer League, it is when you're playing against 18, 19, 20-year-olds for the most part. You kind of talked a little bit about Robbins, went undrafted in 2023, spent last year on a two-way deal with the Bucks, but seems like a guy, like you mentioned, that can maybe be a stretch and can certainly offer some sort of offensive game at designer position. What are you looking for a guy like Liam Robbins?
Yeah, I mean, I think he can shoot it a little bit here, right? Like, he, for a guy as big as he is, like, he's a genuine 7-footer, kind of plodding, 15-7 that last year at Vanderbilt, came out as an older player. He's been okay for some stretches in the G League. I don't have it in front of me, but I feel like he's like a 10-5 G League kind of guy. That's probably more likely where he plays out. Like, if he's the center on the go-go this year, wouldn't ultimately surprise me. Like, they weren't afraid to have a couple big guys that they ended up playing more small than anything anyway. But yeah, could Robbins do that? He suffered an injury coming out right after draft year, so I think that put him a little behind the eight ball. But there's some stuff to like. If you've got decent touch as a big, like, and you protect the rim really well. I want to say he was SEC Defensive Player of the Year, so. That's something to take into account. Yeah, the 3.2 blocks really stands out. Like, the guy played 5 college seasons, and 3 of the 4, his amount of blocks rounded up to 3, right? Like, that's pretty awesome. So I think that's okay. If you can just plant him in the rim and say be a big rim deterrent, like, there's some value to that.
Sounds interesting. I mean, there's Funk last year who played really well as kind of that stretch for the Summer League, and maybe Robbins is that this year. And then you also have Leaky Black, like again, 26 years old. I think Leaky Black was the guy, if you remember, Eric Collins, who's the Hornets broadcaster in Minnesota. Like Leaky Black somehow made a clutch free throw, and he like went berserk. So that's probably what Leaky's most famous for. But again, like a solid player for the go-go last year, 26, 6'6" forward, averaged 8 and 5 on the go-go, shot nearly 40% in 33 games from three. Again, like he's a lot older than some of the guys you'll probably see on this team. Like, do you make much out of his appearance on this Summer League roster, or do you think it's just like, hey, we had another spot, he's a go-go guy, he'll probably still be a go-go guy?
Yeah, he was probably somebody they considered for like a two-way at some point last year, just because, like, I think you keep him around because he's someone that could ultimately come up on an Exhibit 10, or not an exhibit, excuse me, a 10-day contract, later in the season and play like capable defensive minutes, like, right out of the gate for you. Like, he's an NBA level defender. You mentioned the shooting percentage this year. That's a marked improvement from where he's been the rest of his year. Like, not only did he not take many, he didn't make many of the ones he took. Was a deep, like a streaky free throw shooter, but again, didn't get to the line much. He was basically a 3-and-D wing without the three. So like picture like Gary Payton-ish. Could he be like a guy, Gary Payton the second, sorry, not good Gary Payton, but our former Gary Payton. Could he be that kind of guy on an NBA team? Like that's really you know what you're looking at. You remember like when Craig Sword played for the Wizards a few years ago, he played for the G League team, and then they played him, you know, for a cup of coffee in the NBA. Like that's probably the kind of dude you're looking at. If he can make those threes consistently, though, like I could see him catching on with some contender as the last man on the, you know, the roster or something like that.
Yeah, I again, Matt knows his stuff. That's why I wanted him to come on and talk about Summer League, break these guys down. You're not going to get a better breakdown about these guys at the back end of Summer League rosters, especially the Wizards. So hopefully you come away knowing a lot more about these guys. Quick thoughts before I let you go about the Cam Whitmore trade. I know you like Cam Whitmore. I know you're pretty high on him coming out of the draft. What do you make of the trade, and also what do you make of Whitmore in a possible role in Washington?
Yeah, it's just smart, right? Like I think trying to buy low on a guy that at some point in time was considered a pretty consensus top five pick. There's been a lot of reporting, like Sam Vecenie talked about, like there weren't really any first round picks on the table for Houston anywhere, which probably says a lot about where he's at. But to me, if I buy into my coaching, I buy into taking a flyer on a guy like Cam Whitmore because it's not the physical tools that are limitations for him. It's like he was bad defensively so far in his NBA minutes, but he was a really impactful defender at like the U18 level and things like that. Like he was an actual nightmare for people getting the ball across half court. So if you move well laterally, you're explosive and you're physically strong, like tell me why you can't defend other than one, you're not bought in to do it, and two, maybe you're not getting the schemes enough. So they've got enough young guys, maybe they can kind of like help bring him along more so than someone like Houston was willing to do. Obviously, Ime Udoka is like a no bullshit kind of coach, so he doesn't have the probably the patience to bring a guy like that around the way maybe the Wizards coaching staff does. And you just kind of see where it's at. Like the dude's clearly seemed unhappy with the role he had in Houston. He talked about it a lot with the coaching staff, it sounded like by all accounts. So you know, hey, if he can go in here and just be, and then they can like lay it out for him, like, hey, yeah, we want you to score and things like that, but you will not get on the court for us unless you do these X, Y, Z things defensively. And you just kind of set those expectations and also just allowing him to play through mistakes. Like he'd go out for Houston and he'd get beat back door and he'd come out of the game. And it's like, okay, well, he went one over one and now you're pressing when you come in offensively because you got to get shots up before you get yanked again. And having a longer leash here in Washington might just kind of free him up to just go out and be an athlete and hoop. And you gave up essentially nothing to get him. So like that's just a steal to me.
Yeah, again, like even if he doesn't pan out maybe the way they hope he does, like it's still a move you should make. It's still a flyer that you should take. And that's the thing with the second round
Absolutely.
picks. Like, the smaller moves like they just got with the second for Olynyk, the second for dumping that Colby Jones salary and taking back Dylan Jones, those are things that can add up and eventually you can take flyers on guys like Whitmore. And obviously there's been, reporting about, Houston wanted him to buy into a certain role. And Cam was just like, I don't want to be your screen setter and play defense, and maybe I can play offense. Like I can contribute a lot more. And so it's nice, like you mentioned, with the freedom in Washington. Like you make a mistake, okay, you're playing 30, 35 minutes a game. Like the Wizards had three of the five top five rookies in minutes per game last season. Like they're gonna play these guys, and I think that's exactly what Cam wants. It's why I think Houston worked with Cam to get him to Washington. It's clear after, Cam posted the picture of him with Marcin Gortat, who knows when, 2016, 17, that was pretty
Yeah,
cool. But it's clear like he's happy to be home, DMV native. Excited about the move. Obviously, he seems excited about it too, and we'll see where it goes. But definitely the theme there, I think, is the value. Like it's a move you got to make, especially for only 2 seconds. Again, that's gonna wrap it up for this episode. Thank you so much for joining me, Matt, as always, to offer your great analysis. Please tell everybody listening, because your content is awesome, where can they find you?
thanks, Greg. Likewise, you know, I'm your biggest fan here, so keep up the good work. I'm glad we actually have stuff to talk about right now, which is really refreshing. It's a little light in the summers around here. Believe in Wizards, BLEAV, myself and Jihadi White. We will get Jihadi back on here. He's not the biggest draft guy, and he's been busy traveling with his kids. So you know, we'll get that going again here. And then obviously Greg and I both over at Bulls Forever.
Awesome. Again, please make sure to to follow Matt's stuff. He does great work. Obviously, when Jihadi's on as well, Jihadi gives great analysis. It's not often you get to talk to a former NBA player and get those takes. So certainly recommend anything that Matt does. Follow him on Twitter as well, at Matt Moderno. Always posting fun memes about the Wizards, serious stuff as well. So certainly give him a follow. But that's gonna do it for this episode. Again, thank you guys for listening. Go Wiz.